Yeah, hello everybody. To a new outside episode, but not your usual outside episode. First of all, as you can hear, I speak English and not German. And that's not because I have an English guest. It's more because we want to try out a new format. We is Thomas Euler and I. This format will bring you a preview to certain races. So what we want to try is to give you a bit more of an insight into like bigger, or like the big highlights of the year, the big highlights of the gravel season. And the first race we're going to start with is Badlands. But before we're going to start with it, I want to introduce you to Thomas. And I think the easiest is Thomas just explains where he comes from, what his background is, and why we're actually doing this. Because it wasn't my idea, it was his idea, and he contacted me a few weeks ago, and now we are sitting here. Hey, Thomas.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for the intro, and great to be here. So, well, let's probably give a quick introduction to myself. I'm essentially a COVID baby gravel rider myself who didn't even race. Back when in my teenage years, I rode a bit of road bike, but I quickly not only enjoyed riding gravel, but I started following the race scene as far as possible, which we will also get to. And in my professional life and other past life, I've done a bit of podcasting. And since a while, I've been thinking, well, this entire gravel space, the scene that we see over here in Europe evolving, is really undercovered. And then probably with all the stuff happening in the UCI world, the Gravel Earth series, that is stuff where you don't really have a hub. And then I reached out and said, Paul, wouldn't it be cool to do this on the outside platform, which in Germany is, I guess, the leading gravel podcast. I don't know if that is a fair way to put it. And I heard you doing a few English guest episodes, and I figured maybe it's a good idea to start doing it, because it's really exciting what is happening in this sport, in my opinion, as a fan and just a hobby rider who this year, I would have started racing in Aachen. That would have been my first race ever. But then we moved, and I guess if I would have told my wife I will be racing the weekend before the move, that would have caused some issues. So
yeah, especially Aachen was a tricky race for many, so maybe it was good that you moved. And
yeah, it's what I saw then later on.
So
there are, of course, like some things I know from the road scene, like everybody, I guess, who is into cycling knows Lantern Rouge and so on. But there is not really somebody who covers especially the European scene. I guess we want to cover also the American stuff, where you will find more content about especially everything in Lifetime and also probably a Belgian waffle ride. But here, Europe, we want to be pioneers, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. At least we're going to try it. I mean, the idea you came up with, I like the trail, because like in the past years, I was thinking about it as well all the time, that actually that would be nice to have like a platform or the podcast to cover more races. But to be honest, I'm not able to do that. I don't have the time for it. And that's also the reason why this will be an outside podcast, but you will be the host, and in this case I will be the co-host, and you may have some other guests depending on the race. But this first episode, starting with Badlands, we're gonna do together. I have done this race in the past as well. I think the second or third edition of it. And I suffered a lot, and I think it will give like a small insight into like how hard it actually is. But I give the lead to you, and let's start with the preview of Badlands 2024.
So, I mean, you put it well, because you said I did the race, but officially Badlands isn't even a race, which I guess is mostly for insurance reasons. But also, I think it's a bit the ethos of some of these ultra distance events we see out there, that they don't really want to be races, even though of course being the first is still something appreciated. But in your mind, when you did it, it was fully a race, wasn't it? And for most of the like top guys, pro guys who do it, it's a race.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic, because apart from the UCI races, I think almost every race in Europe isn't a race. It is a sportif, or it's not even called sportif, it's just like a ride together. Even races like Trucker, and we all know how big it is now and how important it is, it's officially not a race, but obviously it is a race. So I think it's because of insurance reasons and to get the permissions and all that stuff. But beside that, yeah, Badlands back then already was a race for me. I think it all started with Lachlan Morton. He made that race really famous. And from that point on, everyone wanted to do it, wanted to win it. And yeah, it's in the front, it's definitely a race. And even in the mid-pack or in the back, I think the people are not racing, but they're still just suffering as much as we do in the front. So yeah, it's in the end, all these things always ending up that you're exhausting yourself totally. So yeah, even though it's not a race officially, it's still taken as a race in the end. Yeah.
I mean, to me, I have a personal relationship to Badlands in the sense that it was really the first thing that made me started training. So I bought my gravel bike in whenever, and then I rode it in the woods around my house, and then I started to watch more content. And the first race in Europe that I really came across and thought that is something I want to do one day was Badlands, actually. And then I started digging a bit deeper and seeing these guys to be competitive in there. You need, of course, great legs, but you also need to be willing to not sleep. And I thought, well, that is not something I would like to do. But that is definitely a race that is super attractive to me. And I know several people in my cycling cycle who also think Badlands is probably in Europe the non plus ultra gravel race or long distance thing, because the Trucker has definitely, I think, for the one day stuff, the crown right now. But yeah, Badlands, let's get into, yeah. Go ahead.
You're right. Back then when it started in the early years and also during COVID pandemic, there were not many races, especially not one day races. So Badlands was really so like the only big thing in Europe. And yeah, it evolved. And yeah, as you just mentioned, I think Trucker is the biggest one day thing. But like in regards of multi-day events, Badlands has still the crown and think will keep it for a while.
So in your experience from having now done Badlands, you also earlier this year, you did what is it called? Gran Grunche,
yeah.
Which you also won. I'd be curious, how important are legs versus not sleeping? Because sometimes you can see these moving time Strava people who have much shorter moving times than the eventual winners, but they just slept too much. And that seems to be really the antidote to winning these events.
Yeah, so I think I know if you want to go for the win, you have to be able to not sleep. And as you have seen last year, I don't know the finishing time of last year, but it was again a course record, even though the course was different to the year before when Zepp Heuer won it, the German. Last year, Rob Britton won it in the men's category. And it's so quick, there's no time to sleep. It's actually mind-boggling like how fast they're going now these days. It always depends on the course and obviously also on the weather. If you have less than like, or if you have around 30 degrees, it makes it much easier than having 40 degrees, like when I did it. And so yeah, not sleeping is actually mandatory to be able to win it. If you sleep, you're not going to win it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can have like at this distance. So let's give some parameters for the people who are not familiar. So the race is roughly 750k long, and this year they changed the course once again. We will deep dive a bit into it a bit later, but it's around 16,000 meters of elevation gain this year for the course. So a significant amount of climbing, quite a distance, but as you say, right, you can probably take a few breaks for eating, but a 20 minute nap here and maybe one there, and that's it. And otherwise you need to be willing to really not sleep. Is it all tempo? Do you go sweet spot, or what is the, how hard can you do this for that amount of time?
Yeah, definitely not sweet spot. I think that's too fast. No, it's tempo, and it actually just keep riding. It's about being efficient, yeah? Doing it as little as possible on brakes, like even if you stop for water and going to the toilet or whatever, like do it as quick as possible. And yeah, the level is so high now. It's actually really unbelievable how fast the guys and girls are going now. And yeah, when I did it, which was 2021, yeah, I think 2021, it was actually still more like a survivor thing, but now it's like real, a proper race. You have to prepare, you need a proper tactic, you have to look at the equipment that it's light, but then also still like kind of aerodynamic. And I mean, back then when I started, I had like a proper saddlebag, and I had like definitely too much stuff with me. These days you're taking like a maybe even just a rain jacket with you, so not speaking of like a down jacket, just to mm-hmm. be as light as possible. So it has evolved a lot. And just in general, this ultra, I mean, I don't know if you can call it ultra distance races, because these days now at Trucker events are 560Ks and Unbound XLs more than 500Ks. It seems like those distances coming more into like the racing spectrum than actually being like an ultra distance event,
yeah.
Because they're going now so fast, yeah, and on one leg without sleeping, yeah, so it's changing a bit.
Yeah, if you look at the girls and the guys who do these ultra events at the longest time, it's just insane nowadays. So yeah, I believe we'll need more categories or better terminology to speak about this stuff. But yeah, going back to Badlands, definitely in the you better don't sleep category of ultra, of long distance races and fully a race. I remember last year somebody did a recap of their race, and they at the start line said, hey, how are we going from the start? And they say, yeah, we are going to race from the start. And he was a bit shocked. That's the story I recall. I don't remember who it was, but yeah, it's full out racing in the beginning. And I guess that also is really interesting for the guys who have a sportive approach. I think if we talk about gravel races and gravel events, many of them are not only the pros and the people who go really fast. There are also people who do it as a personal challenge. And while in these previews and analysis, of course, I believe we will focus a lot on these. Probably a word from your experience for the people who are listening, who consider the people like myself. I would like to do it as a personal challenge one day, but I guess I would sleep and I would not go for the win with the people and the times being done right now. What would be your two sentences of advice for how to approach it? Should you think about it like a race? Should you do it, or should you, as an amateur, just say, "Hey, pack stuff and enjoy the time"?
Yeah, pack stuff, enjoy the time. As I mentioned before, eventually you will end up going all out, even though it's maybe not that fast in the end. But you will suffer anyway towards the end, and you will challenge so or so yourself. But yeah, the most important thing is really having a good preparation and a good plan. Like, train well beforehand. Don't take it too easy, but especially mark all the water oases, all the petrol stations. The most important thing is actually to get enough fluid into your body. That's one thing I didn't do well when I did it, and I saw also other people collapsing. So that's actually one of the most important things, to like really do your homework and look up all the different spots to refuel. And then, yeah, try to have a good time and not get too much carried away by other people starting racing it. Because in the end, such an event is like not won in the sense like you're going for the win, but like it's won on like how well you can sleep and how well you can eat and drink. And you can have the best legs in the world at one point. If you can't put energy in or like can't put fluid in, then all these good legs are worth nothing. So yeah, the preparation is really important.
What is, like, from having done the event, the one thing that you really need to experience And you cannot prep on paper. I mean, I can check where is the water oasis, and I can check what is like the GPX file and all this. But what can you not prepare for?
How the weather will be. You know, it's like, it's...
I mean, you're in a desert.
Yeah, you're in many deserts. And there's certain roads and certain paths we come later to. They are just horrible. They just feel like hell. Because you're just slow and you're just sweating and you're just hot and you just want to stop and sleep. So it will, at one point, will be a mental battle, I'm pretty sure. Even as positive as you are, but at one point you will feel like, I just want to stop here. But then you also realize, nah, you can't stop here because it's just too hot and there's no shade. So yeah, I know that there are many things. But in general, I would still will say it's like one of the nicest events and experience you can do if you are well prepared and if you're fit for the challenge.
I mean like desert means during the day you get up to what, 40 degrees probably, and then they say close to 0 degree at night can happen if you're riding, like it goes up to 2,000 meters, right? You had proper elevation, can be 0 degrees, so it's covering quite a range of temperatures, and you need to really adapt for it. So I guess the new thing on the block is like heat adaptation training. You definitely should consider this, no, if you want to be fit for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's also something I didn't do back then, but it's just 3 years ago, but it has changed a lot in that regard.
Pogacar is doing it.
Yeah, even Pogacar is doing it now. Yeah, no, but there's a lot of things you obviously can do in preparation. But I don't think it's the right spot here to recommend all these things, because most of all, I'm not the real expert in it. Because I'm, even though I have done a few of these events now, I'm not good in preparing. I'm good enough to be able to ride it. Yeah, but I do it more with like my legs than really, really the preparation, and that's not the right. How people should actually do it. It's better to have a better preparation and maybe not the legs than the other way around, because I always had to pay my bill at the end for not preparing well enough. So yeah, again, preparation is everything. And luckily these days you have a lot of YouTube videos about the event, or about any event actually, and a lot of things you can read up, like how to prepare for it and so on. Yeah, I think it's good to, I think this episode will be good to like get kind of like the key things, but by the time this podcast will be published, people doing it this year should have been prepared already, because it's just a few days
hopefully
before the start.
Especially like okay, if you think you can do it in like 48-ish hours, okay, then probably you're fine. But like if you think you need 4 or 5 days, then you better really are prepared for it.
Yeah,
because in
exactly,
the end, it's just so much more time you spent on the bike, and then so it takes so much longer to get from one oasis to the other oasis. So yeah, it's a different approach, different mindset, but everybody's riding their bike in the end, and like you say, everybody is suffering just in a different way. So let's probably get a bit into the different sections of the course. So there is desert, and there is a fair amount of climbing. And there are different mountain ranges. Pardon my Spanish, it's not perfect, but there is Sierra Nevada, which is actually the only mountain range I know from personal experience, not riding it, but hiking in there in summer. And it was super hot. I cannot remember having done anything as hot as Sierra Nevada, which obviously, because it starts in Granada every year, the race, and then Sierra Nevada is very close by. Then you get to Sierra de Huetor, Sierra de los Filabres, Sierra de Altamira, Sierra de Gator. And as I said earlier, you climb around 16,000 meters. Any of these mountain ranges that you have fond memories or not so fond memories of?
Oh, yeah. When I did it, we went through the Sierra Nevada just at the beginning, and we blew our doors straight away. So because we started to race up from Granada straight away, like literally racing each other, that was not the smartest idea. So I was cooked by the time we left the Sierra Nevada. To be honest, the rest I maybe have done, but I can't remember because I'm really bad with the names. And And then also in the end, everything looked the same kind of for me because I was so done, like literally done. Yeah. So I was just like thinking about like what's coming up next, but not really like caring about like what the name of certain things are. And you just reminded me before we started here what the Ramblas are. And I just know La Ramblas, as in Spanish cities, like the main street or something. But actually those they're not roads.
Those Ramblas are different.
Those Ramblas are different. We're coming to them later. They really break me. They were horrible. Yeah. But we're coming to that later.
Yeah, let's, as we are there, I will just read from the website a few sentences because they really describe it in the best possible way what they are. So they say these Ramblas are one of the most distinctive landscapes of the Tabernas Desert. They are dry, sandy river basins comes from the Arabic word of Ramla, like a sandbank. And that is exactly what they are. They are riverbeds that have dried out and they are now everywhere in this desert. And I wondered, so of course it's a bit like riding on sand, but it also doesn't look like deep sand as you might have seen in a cyclocross race or so. What is it actually? You say that it's super slow, it kills you. What kind of tires would you pick for Ramblas?
It's really weird because some of them are like washboard, you know, and you're not like, it's strange, it's not like a cyclocross race, sand pit, or like on the beach. It's something in between, but it's still soft enough that you sometimes hardly can ride and you have to walk. And because it's in the desert, it's also bloody hot and you just like, and it looks like in a Western movie as well. So it's also visually really tough because it looks all a bit rough, but not in a way like beautifully rough. It's just like really like, yeah, I don't know. I had to describe. It's just like, yeah.
Fun fact.
It is just,
you mentioned that.
Yeah.
You mentioned movie scenes. There are several Western movies. They mentioned this somewhere on the side. Several Western movies have actually been shot there. So if you want to check out pictures of La Ramblas, you might come across some stuff, you know, from Western movies and shows and so on that have been shot there because it really looks like this. It's like a moon landscape, Western landscape. It's really... really crazy, but
yeah, it's a cool place to be, but you're also happy when you pass it, you know. So it's like, it's really hard. So I mean, obviously, just in general regarding bike setup for these events, I will always recommend go as wide as possible regarding tires. If you can fit in 45, perfect. If you can fit in 50 millimeters,
mountain bike
even
tires.
If you can, if you can fit in mountain bike tires. Even better. So go as big as possible, and it's in general a trend in gravel. And suspension forks, they're getting lighter and lighter as well. If you are able to build like a light setup or having a mountain bike with maybe a drop bar, which also many people start using now, and why not going for it if you're not necessarily going for the win? Because I think if you want to be able to win, you still have to look after the weight a bit as well. Yeah, that's also an important topic because a lot of climbing. But if your goal is to like to finish it in your own pace, then why not going for the most comfortable setup? And I think we are past the point where it has to be a gravel bike, where the bike has to look a certain way. It's more like use what you feel most comfortable with it. And I will definitely go for the widest tire possible. And suspension fork could be an option, yeah.
I mean, if you compare the pictures of Leadville with the pictures of here Badlands, then and people do Leadville on mountain bikes and probably on drop bar mountain bikes these days, then I would think you could definitely do it on a mountain bike because it looks more like mountain bike terrain, at least in parts, than Leadville does.
Yeah, I mean, we are anyway now in a time, which started just a few months ago, where gravel bikes turn more into like hybrid bikes or like Frankenstein bikes. So I think there will come the point where we anyway define new how a gravel bike maybe has to look like, even a race gravel bike. So is a fast-changing environment at the moment. But yeah, again, go with that setup where you feel most comfortable with, and yeah, go as wide as possible.
So let's go a bit further. There is new stuff they introduced on the route this year. And the first, and I guess the highlight of the new route, as the organizers describe it themselves, is Col of Alto de Vellefique, which is a 1719 meter climb. They describe it as one of the most iconic and beautiful cols in Spain. It's after Cala Alto Observatory and is followed by an incredible descent down to the town of Vellefique. So that could be a pretty decisive moment. I don't know if you have familiarity with this mountain range from your other racing back in the days, but it leads me to a question, because already you kind of answered it. You said, look, everything becomes one. You remember Sierra Nevada, and then afterwards there are points. But if you are in these events, do you pick ahead of time a certain point where you think, okay, that is where I really plan to go hard? Or is that even a stupid idea because you really need to see how you feel? Is it like normal racing or one day racing?
Yeah. Unfortunately, again, I'm not really an expert in this. So I will go mostly by feel, but I also know that guys actually having like kind of like a timetable where they want to be, like on which point time and so on. So they have like a proper strategy. I never really had that. I just went out and went by feel. And obviously when you go up in altitude, your power drops and so on. And also when you have like a few hours where you actually couldn't buy any food or any water, then obviously you have to pay attention to that as well. So yeah, no, unfortunately never had a proper plan to it because I'm too emotionally on these kind of things. I'm acting more really by feeling than really by plan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I would recommend for people to have their like kind of like a structure, you know, like knowing on this point, I don't know, like this town should be good to be there around this time, because also what you have to consider all the time is that not everything is open 24/7. So it sometimes makes sense maybe to take it a bit easier, or even you have to maybe ride a bit faster to come in time to that town or to that shop and so on. Again, that's preparation. And I never really did that.
What were, when you did it, the longest stretches without any gas stations, restaurants or so? Stuff where you could buy food?
To be honest, I can't remember. I just remember that we went up Sierra Nevada and we raced for like 4 hours, and then we were like a big lead group. We stopped at like this one place, and then we had like a big loop through like this one desert. And I underestimated how hot it will be. I ended up after like a few hours without any drinks and was literally lying on the side of the road with some other riders, and we had to stop cars and ask them for water because we were like so dry out. Mm-hmm. And so that was a bad memory, but to be honest, I can't remember when it was. It was on the first day, and then also got a heat stroke. So that next night I had to sleep 10 hours to try to recover. And actually, I can't remember, I felt as bad as that day. You know, like when your heat stroke is so strong that you have so much blood in your head and in your ears that when you talk, you have so much pressure on your ears. It was unbelievable.
Shit.
So I never felt that bad, and I couldn't eat, but I should have eaten. I couldn't drink because I was just feeling ill all the time. And yeah, it was horrible. I still finished 8th in the end after like the good sleep. I found a bit of power for the next day, but yeah, it was horrible. So I can't recommend getting dehydrated.
Yeah. I mean, I've never been that bad. So at least not from cycling. This definitely doesn't sound like the way to do it. Yeah.
No.
So then let's get a bit further in the changes they introduced to the route. So the Gorafe Desert itself is shorter Cabo de Gata and Tabernas Desert, there is more riding. And in total, it's 150 new kilometers. So as you said, I think the route has changed in the past all the time a bit. But it sounds to me, without having compared all the GPX files of all the past editions, that these are probably the most significant changes they introduced to the route in the last few years, at least. Then they also introduced a loop of Albuludui, which sounds quite fun. It starts before that town with a rambla. And I guess they mean the ramblas we talked about before and not the fun ones you find in Barcelona and so on. Mm. After a village called Las Alcubilas. And then it goes through the Rambla de los Yesos until the town of Ragol. So in case you have done your preparation based on GPX files of past editions, you might want to reconsider, because there is definitely a fair amount of new stuff going on this year, which I guess creates a bit more excitement for the people who've done it a few times already. And that also means that there is more elevation gain than in the last editions. So I guess the race is getting harder even. Let's see what that makes with times.
Yeah. Yeah, but that also you have to consider, like, sometimes it really depends how the elevation is. Like, more elevation can actually be easier depending on the climbs and so on. But yeah, I think it's good that they keep changing the courses, because I think the whole experience about it is also that you kind of enter the unknown, you know, that you can't really look up what has been done the year before and can always find, like, yeah, new gems or something. So I think it's good that they keep changing it around. Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, the one thing that some people will be sad about, because we all like this best time ever on a certain track or course, and that is not really comparable if you introduce these big changes. But yeah, c'est la vie.
It's also not a race, indeed. Officially, so.
Exactly. So, if this would be a more traditional race, then we would now be at the point where we would look into favorites for the race, and we would go through the start list and say, these are the people we really can look at. Alas, there is no such thing as an official start list, and I even tried to contact the race organizers for the start list. And of course, you find some people on Instagram mentioning that they are going to do the event, and still to us now, it's a bit of a surprise who is going to do it, so we won't be able to have this kind of segment, which would make for a good race preview as well. But again, it's not a race, so fair enough. However...
Yeah, the only person I know personally who's doing it is Svenja Betz, yeah. Also guest in the Outside podcast a few times. I think she's one of the favorites in the women's field. She won Unbound XL, yeah. The women's race. So yeah, at least we will know one person
who definitely win it. Does it. Yeah. Instead of talking about like last year's winners, we already mentioned Rob Britton won it. I would use this little time slot that is free now in the episode to discuss and go into, because if we've in the future cover a bit more of these long distance things, discuss a bit like what makes for good winners and how to even analyze the field for such an event. For instance, one question I was wondering about is how many of these events can you do and how long of a break do you need? After you've done Gran Guanche earlier this year, I think you were quite fatigued, quite tired, even sick after this. Of course, not everybody gets sick, but these events take a lot out of you physically, mentally. So somebody who has already done 2-3 super long distance events, would you say that is good? Is it super personal and some people can do 5 of them per year? Or do you think there is something we should, just physiologically speaking, as analysts, consider as the maximum amount?
But I think it's really a personal thing, because when you look at Robin Gempele, mm-hmm. I hope I pronounce him rightly, the Swiss guy who won Transcontinental a few weeks ago. He has done this year already a few multi-day events. And then also I know that guys like Mattia Demarchi, he's in the past at least, he tried a few multi-day events in a year. So I think it's really, it really depends so much on like on how good you are at these things. I'm okay with one event, you know, but then even this one event is taking out so much of me that...
And you have different goals. I mean, it's not the typical type of racing that you do.
Yeah, but also I don't have the body for it, you know. I don't have like this thing of like not sleeping. It's not... I'm not good at it, you know. You need to be able that you also like mentally you need to be ready for it. I'm not ready for that. So I think there are a lot of components who make up a good ultra distance racer. So I think 2 to 3 it's possible in a year, like an average for the most, but everything above that I think it's really how good you are recovering and so on. But like I mean, for normal people who are just like actually have a family working etc, doing more than 2 a year I think is already a big ask, because you know you need days off, you need to prepare for it. I mean, you can't just work up there with like 1,000 Ks in your legs a year. I mean, you can do that, but it won't be that much fun. And so I think, yeah, 2 is maximum for most, and for the pros, yeah, 2-3, maximum 4, I would say. Yeah.
Do you think it's beneficial or maybe even counterproductive to be a pro or have pro racing experience like World Tour or probably the nowadays the pro gravel circuit if you enter in these events? Or do you think it's like so much its own genre that you really need to be specializing in it nowadays?
Yeah, it's its own genre and you need to specialize in it. Being a former World Tour rider doesn't help you really, because you still need to be able to ride through the night and to ride constantly for 48 hours.
And maybe in the beginning you're constantly thinking, oh, I want to go hard, but you shouldn't go too hard.
Yeah, you possibly you have more talent, possibly you have like a higher VO2 max, so you know your threshold is possibly higher than the top guys, but that's not what it's about. So it's more about like being able to put out constant watts, being able to have really short stops, being able to not sleep like in the front or longer events, being able to sleep as little as possible, like the Transcontinental where you sleep actually, but you also try to minimize that. So that's a different, it's a different talent and a different ask. And I will say, yeah, being a former World Tour rider also, and it's not really helping you that much. Yeah.
And I guess you better be also a somewhat decent mechanic on the road.
Oh yeah,
you have no.
You should know how to plug a tire. You should know how to fix a broken chain. You should know how to fix a broken shoe. Whatever can break, you should be able to fix that. And I mean, most guys, they don't have like spare like bib shorts or spare jerseys with them, you know. So sitting or using the same kit for like multiple days, it's also. Yeah, you have to get used to that. It's not that
nobody's
nice.
Washing your stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's a different genre, and but I think also it's so established now that people respecting this genre and then also not trying to get in there and think of like, oh, I'm just kind of come over and like crush it here. Same as in like gravel racing, like speaking of one day events, it's of course in like some UCI races it's easy for the road guys coming in and winning. But
some not
winning unbound and some not. And unbound means a lot of preparation. And of course, legs are still the most important thing. But if you're not prepared regarding mechanicals and so on, you won't be able to win. So it's much more complicated these days. And it's actually good because it gives more people actually a chance to make a career.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we see at Unbound, right? You have the Gravel World Champ coming over. And picking the wrong tires.
A lot of mechanical problems. Yeah.
It's own thing. But Ultra, I think we don't even see this, right? You saw Wout starting Gravel Worlds like last year, 2 years ago. I don't remember.
Last year.
But I think for something like Badlands, no active pro is going to line up and think they can do this kind of effort just because it's so different.
Yeah, it will destroy them for a fair amount of time, and I think at the moment it's not worth to do it. Yeah.
So, as we cannot pick any winners and favorites for the race, I guess we are pretty much at the end of the preview part of this podcast. One final question that I do have for you. If you would be able to know who is starting and know these riders, what would be the main characteristic in a racer who takes it as a race to win Badlands?
Oh, resilience.
Okay. Yeah. There is not one. Resilience. Yeah. I guess resilience and what I think hard to measure, but heat. I assume, like, riding so many hours in desert heat is also something that I would be quite looking into. Just knowing from other racing how much it affects people and their physiology, I think that is also a key thing in this race, if it's hot. But
yeah, sure. I hope these guys and girls have made their homework and have done heat adaptation training. But like this whole ultra distance event thing got so professional now that people who know they want to go for like a really great result preparing quite well. And even as you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, even people just like doing it for their own challenge should prepare maybe in a way they haven't done it in the past. For now, it's a bit too late to start heat adaptation a few days out of the race. But in general, it's a good thing to do this for the events, and you will actually feel a big benefit of it from it.
So that was it from my end. Anything that we didn't cover that we should have talked about?
Not that I feel, no. And if we actually missed anything, please leave a comment or send messages, you know, on which channels. I will put Thomas' Instagram as well into the show notes if he wants me to. I don't know if do you have a public?
I do have a public Instagram public that I use profile only for cycling stuff, and we can put it in the show notes.
Okay, good. Then we will put that there as well. You can text him as well. And yeah, you can hear us again in a few weeks. This will not be like a regular episode, will be more of like when big race is coming up. Obviously the biggest this year will be the Gravel World Championships. I think that will also be a bit easier to make a list of favorites, which will be quite long in the women's and in the men's race.
Yeah.
But also a race I can speak more about because I will do it myself, and I hope I can consider myself at least a dark horse. But there's still a month to go for that. So yeah. See you soon. Speak to you soon.
It was a pleasure. Take care, Paul.